Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany on this frigid President's Day. And I'm here to talk with Alan Collins. And Alan is founder of the Student Loan Justice. And he is a keen observer of what's going on in the presidential primaries and debates. And he's here to talk about his understanding of how the presidential candidates are dealing with the student loan crisis. So, Alan, what's your assessment at this point?
Well, you know, unfortunately, Cynthia, at this point, I have to say that we aren't nearly as far along on this issue as I hoped we would be. You know, nearly all the candidates include, you know, the pain of student loan debt and so on and so forth in their stump speeches. But what they're proposing in their platforms is quite different from the rhetoric we're hearing. And that spans the spectrum from Bernie Sanders to, you know, Ted Cruz and everywhere in between, perhaps with one exception, which I can talk about at some point. One of the important things to remember is that, you know, the Founding Fathers, when they wrote the Constitution, at the very top of, not the very, but near the top of the list, when they enumerated the powers of Congress, was that Congress should create a uniform bankruptcy system. And there's good reason for this. You know, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and other of the Founding Fathers were eyeballs deep in debt to British banks and merchants and so forth. And so really, you know, the Declaration of Independence was more of a document of economic emancipation as anything. And so when the founders enumerated the powers of Congress years later when they wrote the Constitution, a uniform bankruptcy system was placed above the power to declare war, above the power to raise an army, a navy, even above the power to coin currency in all the things that Congress can do. It was, I think, number 3 or 4 on the list. And so people should understand that bankruptcy is a critical and essential hallmark of any good faith lending system. And the fact that bankruptcy has been removed from student loans uniquely, in fact, student loans are the only type of loan in this nation's history to be specifically vacated of standard bankruptcy protections. It is absolutely critical that this exists. And so, you know, Hillary Clinton, for example, when she was in the Senate, she took a look at the student loan problem, and she very quickly introduced a bill into the Senate that would have paved the way for the return of these standard bankruptcy protections. And, you know, we certainly at StudentLoanJustice.org applauded her greatly for this. But, you know, Cynthia, since she began running for president, she's not so much as mentioned bankruptcy and student loans in the same sentence. And quite frankly, neither has Bernie Sanders. And so I'm just kind of sitting here going, what the heck is going on here? It's extremely, it's just mystifying. It's baffling.
Now, you had mentioned a number of times the number of how many people in this country are burdened with student debt. It's over 40 million, correct?
Yeah, it's about 44 million people are now owing about $1.4, $1.5 trillion in student loan debt. This has exploded since, let's say, since Obama took office. When Obama took office in 2008, we owed slightly north of $400 billion. Well, now we owe more than $1 trillion, more than that. So $1 trillion has been added to the nation's student loan debt bill since Obama took office. And there are, as I said, 44 million people walking around with this debt. And remember, it's not just bankruptcy protections that have been removed. It's also statutes of limitations, fair debt collection practices, truth in lending laws, refinancing rights. And even state usury laws have been vacated uniquely and specifically from student loans. And so this is a predatory lending instrument that really has risen its nasty head over the past 8 years, although the problem really goes back to beginning in the 70s and fait accompli in 1998 with the amendments to the Higher Education Act of 1965 that made bankruptcy and all the things I mentioned earlier, took them off the table. So while we were very heartened when Hillary Clinton introduced a bill that would have returned bankruptcy protections, and we were further heartened when Elizabeth Warren appeared on 60 Minutes with us in 2006 and similarly decried the astonishing absence of all those consumer protections I mentioned, we haven't heard anything from the Democrats, not Elizabeth Warren, and I know she's not running, but still, she's important. Not Hillary Clinton, not Bernie Sanders, not Martin O'Malley. Nobody on the Democratic side is willing to even touch this issue anymore in the campaigns. And this is very disturbing. One ray of sunshine that is completely it was not predicted, is Jeb Bush, believe it or not. Jeb Bush is the only presidential candidate of the two major parties who has proposed the return of bankruptcy protections for student loans in his platform. Now, Jeb is only proposing the return of bankruptcy protections to private student loans. So there's two types of student loans. There's federal and private. And so Jeb Bush is proposing the return of bankruptcy protections to private student loans, which is significant, but, you know, private student loans are only about 15 or 20% of the whole student loan universe. Most student loans are federal student loans. And so it's a bit baffling why Bush would propose the return of bankruptcy only to private loans. But, you know, still in all, he is to be commended. I mean, the people demand and deserve to at least have standard bankruptcy protections on their side on this issue. And so, you know, that George Bush is the only candidate who's even broached the topic really says a lot about the state of our politics, number one. But, you know, again, we have to give some credit where credit is due. And that, amazingly, goes to Jeb Bush.
You know, I've been watching what goes on in Albany with, you know, the presidential race and the people that are getting involved. And I watch the TV and see what's going on. And with all of the people that are burdened with student debt, and, you know, like Bernie Sanders says, oh, you know, we're creating a revolution. Why aren't the people with student debt pushing the candidates to say something? That baffles me.
Well, I can tell you, at studentloanjustice.org, we certainly are pushing nearly every day and going forward every day until the end of the primaries, until the general election, quite frankly. We'll be blitzing every candidate that we see an opportunity to make this an issue with. But, you know, we only comprise about 40,000 people at this point. And I mean, we should be up in the several million in my estimation. You know, of the 44 million people who are walking around with student loan debt, 27 million of them are currently unable to pay on the debt. So in other words, they are either in deferment, forbearance, their loans are defaulted, or they're otherwise delinquent. So I agree with the tone of your question. I'm wondering where these people are too. I can only hope that they will find our group, Student Loan Justice, and you know, sign up and start fighting for themselves. Because it's clear at this point that you know, Congress and the presidential candidates, with rare exceptions, certainly aren't gung ho to fight for them. So this is I mean, it's a tough issue, Cynthia, because, you know, debt generally is kind of a personal, private matter, and nobody wants to go out in public and shake their fist and say, you know, I'm in debt. But the fact of the matter is that this particular debt, student loan debt, is predatory and inflationary on a scale that we've never before seen. You know, As I said, no other lending instrument is vacated of all the consumer protections that I've mentioned earlier, bankruptcy, statute of limitations, et cetera. And also no other commodity, you know, including yachts and diamonds and healthcare and every other sort of high inflation commodity can even hold a candle to the inflation that has run rampant in the cost of college. I mean, the price of a college education today has risen at more than double the consumer price index or the rate of inflation over the past 30, 40 years at this point. And I mean, even healthcare, which is, I think, number two on the list as far as inflation is concerned, it still pales in comparison to the price of college. So this is an issue that really can be solved, but the standard consumer protections that the founding fathers held so dear need to be returned to this debt instrument if we're going to see any sort of a rational price return to the quote-unquote market of higher education. And, you know, the people hopefully will be coming around on this soon. That is my guess, that is my assumption, and that is my true hope. But they've really got to quit being distracted and intimidated and so forth. The time to hide and suffer in silence is, I would say, long past. And the time to stand up for yourself, stand up even to the government if need be, and in this case it certainly is needed, has come. And so I would just encourage everybody listening to this program to come to studentloanjustice.org and understand this problem and see why our argument is so strong. We'll see why we have every right and, in fact, every responsibility to demand at a minimum the return of the standard consumer protections that should have never been taken away from any student loans.
You know, you just mentioned the word inflationary, where the cost of college, you know, is skyrocketing.
Yes.
You know, when people get out of college, they might have, you know, a great degree. But when, for example, a friend of mine who recently got out of college, he lives in Albany. He's an architect. He can't find a job. He cannot find a job. So if college is not preparing people to go into the workforce and jobs are disappearing, I just don't get it.
You know, the math just doesn't work out. And, you know, that's what happens when you have a lending system that stands behind a market where, you know, money is lent out willy-nilly, essentially. You know, just getting into the college qualifies you for receiving student loans, and without any effective oversight from government to restrict how much can be lent to the students, they're going to be walking out with ever-increasing student debt burdens. I mean, so when I started Student Justice 10 years ago, the average undergrad was leaving school with around $13,000 in student loan debt. Well, today, 10 years later, the average student is walking out of college with nearly triple that amount, so about $35,000 in student loan debt. Now, that's for undergrads. For graduate students, the amount is far higher. I don't know off the top of my head what it is, but I suspect it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $65,000 or $70,000 in student loans. And so this just cannot continue. You know, I mean, even an architect, his first year out of undergrad, he'll probably only be making about what architects made 10 years ago coming out of college, which is, you know, $37,000, $38,000, depending on, you know, where he ends up and so on and so forth. But it's not going to be a whole lot of money. And so, you know, what was a very difficult challenge for recent graduates 10 years ago, today is an impossible one for, clearly, for about 63% or more of people leaving school. And so that's, I mean, the numbers are just huge, and Congress has kicked the can down the road. The president, Obama, you know, to his discredit, I like Obama, by the way, but on this issue, he completely sucks. They've kicked the can down the road to where it's no longer a can. It's some kind of a toxic waste barrel, I think.
Oh, my boy. So what about, okay, this I think is a very important question. None of the candidates, the presidential candidates, are addressing this issue, whether it be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, or any one of them is not really addressing this issue. Is that because they are so beholden to the bank that they're afraid to say something?
Well, I don't think it's just the banks. It is the banks. It is academia. You know, the colleges are sitting in the catbird seat on this. They've never been awash in as much cash as they are now. So it's the banks, it's the colleges, but more than that, it's really the Department of Education. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize the Department of Education was set up by former Sallie Mae executives, and it was set up to run like a business. And so, I mean, make no mistake, the federal government loves making the obscene amount of profit that it does on the student loan program. Almost nobody listening to this, I suspect, knows that not only did the government book $50 billion in profits on the student loan program in 2011, the federal government has been making a profit on defaulted student loans for many, many, many years and decades, in fact, going back. So this is a defining hallmark of a predatory lending system. And, you know, historically, Congress has listened to Sallie Mae and the Department of Education almost exclusively when making decisions about, you know, should we raise the lending limits, you know, how should we modify the lending program, et cetera. And these companies and institutions, Sallie Mae is now a for-profit company, and the Department of Education obviously is an institution. These folks have jettisoned the public interest years ago, if it ever existed in these places. They are out to make a buck. And, you know, the Department of Education, for example, fights tooth and nail behind the scenes with courts across the nation to keep bankruptcy protections gone from student loans. You know, there have been a lot of pretty viable challenges to the bankruptcy code in that these special restrictions have been placed on student loans. Uniquely, but the Department of Education and its lawyers have fought tooth and nail behind the scenes, along with the banks, along with, you know, trade groups and so forth, and they've been extraordinarily effective at doing it. So my guess is that the candidates are really beholden not only to the banks, the lenders, and the schools who love the status quo, but also to the Department of Education. And it's very hard to get a word in edgewise as a citizen expert on this issue with these people, because the smoke has been blown so thickly by the people that I just mentioned. But, you know, over time, the blatant fallacies of their claims, the blatant untruths and indefensible untruth, mistruth, and omissions that these people have committed for the sake of perpetuating this predatory lending system are rising to the fore, and they're pretty much unavoidable at this point. So my true hope is that Congress will get a clue, and I am hopeful, but I think our more immediate concern right now is to get through to the candidates. I mean, Hillary Clinton's not stupid, and Bernie Sanders neither is. Certainly on this issue, they've been around the block and they've seen and done a few things on this issue, not all of them good, but, you know, they have to understand that there are 27 million voters out there in the country for whom student loan debt is at the top of their list of issues. And these people vote, and these people are well-educated, and these people have families. And for the presidential candidates, both Republican and Democrat, to throw these people under the bus is a huge error in judgment. I mean, this is just idiocy. 27 million people is enough to turn a presidential election loss into a landslide, and vice versa. You know, I mean, Barack Obama, I think, won with, I think, only 63 or so million votes. And the margin was, I think, 4 or 5, maybe 6 million votes at the most. His first time around, I think the margin was far smaller, like 3 million votes or so. And so they ignore this issue, and I include the Republicans in this, at their great peril. And make no mistake, there actually is one candidate worth voting for right now, Cynthia, and that is Jill Stein of the Green Party. The Green Party, right, believe it or not, is calling for the abolition of all student loans. And,
Alan, let me interject something.
Please
the
do.
Other day, yeah. I ran into a Bernie supporter, and
okay.
I had talked about, you know, Jill Stein, and he looked at me like I had three heads, and I said, well, you know, Jill Stein is the only one that's talking about the student loan debt crisis. And he says, oh, no, he says, Bernie is talking about a forgiveness program. Is there any such thing?
No, that's false. What Bernie Sanders is calling for is free tuition for public colleges. Now, that sounds great. Quite frankly, I've looked at his plan, and it doesn't look that great to me. In fact, it looks like the lending system will perpetuate, and kids will be borrowing as much as they ever have under Bernie's plan. And same for Hillary, by the way. They're putting up two similar solutions. But neither Hillary nor Bernie are proposing anything that would do anything significantly for people who have already been through school. So, in other words, people who have already gone through school, already have the debt to show for it, the most Hillary and Bernie are proposing are these refinancing schemes, which would allow them to refinance their existing debt at lower interest rates. Well, even, I mean, if you look at these plans, even in today's low interest rate environment, the savings would average something like $2,000 per student over the lifetime of the repayment schedule. So a student borrowing $35,000 today and would be repaying like $70,000 if everything goes well for them over the next 10 years, they're only going to see about a $2,000 reduction. So these refinancing plans are ridiculous. And more than that, both Hillary and Bernie are touting these so-called forgiveness plans. But these are existing plans that, while they promise loan forgiveness at the end of a 10 or 25-year repayment period, the fact of the matter is these forgiveness programs are going to wind up harming the vast majority of people that try out for them, because the Department of Education is running these forgiveness programs like a credit card teaser deal. So to date, over nearly 60% of the people who have signed up for income-based repayment, for example, there's a program that forgives debt after 25 years, 57, so nearly 60% of the people signing up for this program have already been kicked out of the program for failure to verify their income on an annual basis. It's a very onerous hoop that the borrowers have to jump through, and they're administered purposefully to be difficult to weed as many people out of these programs as possible. So my best estimate is, at the end of the day, fewer than 15% of the people trying for these loan forgiveness programs will actually make it through to the end. The remaining 85% or more, probably 90% is my most truthful best guess, probably 90% are going to be kicked out of the programs owing far more than when they entered. And so these forgiveness programs are ridiculous. They sound good, but in fact they are essentially like life jackets they're like anchors dressed up like life jackets, is what I like to say.
And
so Hillary and Bernie are out to lunch.
The unfortunate part about that conversation that I had on Saturday, the person I had that conversation with is a retired college professor. He should have known better. Would you say that's correct?
I agree, you know, and we saw this with Obama as well in Obama's first run for the presidency. People jump onto their bandwagon. They go, oh, you know, Obama's going to do something for student loans. Yeah. But they don't know what they're talking about because they haven't looked closely at what the candidates have said. And I know for a fact, having looked at this problem intensely for 10 years, if the candidate does not say it on the campaign trail, they're not going to do it when they assume the presidency. This was true with Bush. It was true with Obama. And it certainly will be true with the next president, I am sure. And so I would just urge everybody listening to this to not be swept up in the rhetoric. You know, Bernie seems like a great guy. He says all the right things, you know, in terms of wealth disparity and standing up to the banks. But, you know, so did Elizabeth Warren. So does Hillary Clinton to a lesser extent. And certainly so did Obama. And he did nothing. And Hillary and Bernie have not stepped up when it really counts. Elizabeth Warren to this point has been a major, drastic disappointment. In fact, the only legislation Elizabeth Warren has put forth has looked more like a bailout for the banks than anything that actually benefits the borrowers. And so I would just urge people to read between the lines. Don't be sucked into the rhetoric. Stand up for yourselves. Ask the tough questions of the campaigns, because right now the campaigns are listening. After the primaries are over, they will be listening far less. And by the time the actual general election happens and we have a new president, it will be infinitely harder for the citizens' voice to be heard by these people. Now is the time for people to get off the couch, pick up the phone, you know, walk down to your local congressman or senator's offices and demand that not only the presidential candidates, but the members of Congress as well, stand up for this issue. And I might add, on a point of hope, Cynthia, you know, it was 10 years where we had almost no good legislation on this topic to be put forth. But today, we now have three really good bills in the House of Representatives that, if pushed, would solve this problem to a great effect. So they're H.R. 4799, and that's a bill put forth by John Delaney in Maryland. There's H.R. 3451, which comes from Daniel Kildee of Michigan. And there's also H.R. 1352 put forth by Frederica Wilson out of Florida. Now, the first bill I mentioned, 449, that actually has bipartisan support. So there's both Democrats and Republicans who have co-sponsored the bill. And so I'm very hopeful. But again, as you pointed out, the citizens need to stand up, find the citizen leaders, and find the good people in Congress to get with on this. And they need to stand up and fight, because nobody is going to fight for them. I would just encourage them to put a plug in for studentloanjustice.org.
Every time I mention Jill Stein, people always tell me, well, remember what happened in 2000 in Florida. Instead of looking at it realistically or having an open mind, they immediately think of 2000 in Florida with Ralph Nader. Okay, so people are closed-minded about this. Why do you think, as of right now, Jill Stein has received no national coverage?
Well, I think there's a lot of answers to that. Number one, I think the media has played into this to a great extent. I mean, in fact, I would say the media is why Donald Trump is in a leading position right now. The media grabs... The media really control... Sorry?
Of course. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the media plays a big part of this. And just sort of name recognition is, you know, a big part of it. You know, to me, it's almost like a two-headed beast, the Democrats and the Republicans, sort of flip sides of the same coin, if you will. It's very hard for good candidates from other parties, the Libertarian Constitutional Party, and certainly the Green Party, to make any headway. And I, you know, I think this is a real shame. People say that Ralph Nader brought us George Bush, but I would look right back to the Democratic candidates who completely ignored Ralph Nader and his constituents, completely. In fact, I happen to know Ralph Nader and his associates, and I can tell you that, you know, Ralph Nader sat down with Al Gore when it looked clear that Al Gore was on his way to the nomination, and Ralph Nader offered Al Gore. He laid down a list of 20 issues, and Nader said, Gore, if you take any three, just three of these issues, and make them a part of your campaign, I'll quit the race. I'll throw all my support to you. Well, Al Gore told him to go get you know what, to stick it where the sun don't shine. And so, you know, I blame the Democrats more than the third party candidates for their election woes that year. And looking forward, I would say the same thing. If people don't vote their conscience, their interests will never be represented in Washington. And, you know, at this point, I can't see much difference in Hillary Clinton or a Republican president, given their, you know, quite frankly, closeness on the issue. Donald Trump, you know, name them. I would much rather vote my conscience and live with the results than, you know, see a perpetuation of the status quo, certainly on the student loan issue. So, I mean, we as Student Loan Justice obviously are pushing all the major party candidates as hard as we can. But in the 11th hour, if none of those people have come around, we will energetically and enthusiastically support any other candidate who steps in, whether they be from the Green Party or the Libertarian or any party. We will throw our support solidly behind them, whatever the ramifications may be. And I would urge people, don't be sucked in and don't be intimidated into voting for somebody you like least. Find somebody you can vote for and just do that. that's my best advice.
Okay. I have a question. If the student loan debt crisis is not addressed during the 2016 presidential election and things continue the way they are, what will happen to this economy?
Well, I mean, speaking for myself, what my reaction would be to that as a citizen activist, if the presidential campaigns completely leave us in the dust, then sometime around January 20th, when the new president takes power, I myself will probably head to Boston and go to whatever is left of the Boston Harbor. I'll invite as many people as will come. I'll invite the media and everybody, and I will burn my student loan papers, vowing never to pay a dime on my own student loans, and I will urge everybody that attends to do the same thing. And quite frankly, my belief, my expectation at that point is that student loans will become one large national joke. They will lose their legitimacy, and nobody will pay. And the entire portfolio, both public and federal, will evaporate into a mist of illegitimacy. That is just the fact. The people have put up with this nonsense, this unconstitutional betrayal of our rights for too long. And, you know, $1.5 trillion is nothing to sneeze at. And if Congress can't get themselves together, if the presidential candidates can't even acknowledge and address this issue, then there is no other recourse. And the citizens will be completely justified in burning their student loan papers and vowing never to pay a dime ever, ever, no matter what might happen after that point.
So, Alan, if people want to get in touch with you, if people want to become part of your movement, if people want to understand or realize that they can do something to alleviate their stress and their trauma and their financial debt, How can they do so?
Well, the first place to come is obviously to our website, studentloanjustice.org. But where the rubber really meets the road on this, fortunately or unfortunately, is Facebook. So at the top of the page of our website, you can easily see how to join not only our Facebook group on this, but also join state chapters. So we have state chapter groups set up for every state of the union, and even for expatriates who are living out of the country, of which there are quite a few, believe it or not. I mean, this is where the rubber meets the road in terms of political action, in terms of doing local stuff, pounding the pavement, pressing the flesh, and so forth. So, I would urge them to just come to the website and jump onto our Facebook groups, anonymously or anonymously, as long as your passion is in the right place and you're on our side. I would urge everyone hearing this to come on by and let's see what we can do. There is true power in numbers on this. And as I mentioned, we only have 4,000 people in our group right now between our website and our Facebook groups. Really, we should have, 4 million or more. And so when we start getting size more appropriate to the size of the problem, we really can't lose. I mean, we've made a tremendous progress with the few thousand people that we have now, but we could do a lot more with a lot more people. I can guarantee you this. In fact, I would say this problem could be solved in the next 6 months if we had even a million or two people involved. And so studentloanjustice.org, come there, sign up, and get with your state chapters, and let's get this thing done.
Thank you. You've been listening to Alan Collins of Student Loan Justice, and this has been a really enlightening conversation, Alan, and it will be continued, I am sure. So,
fantastic, Cynthia. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Have a great President's Day. Everybody
you
out
too.
There,
Happy
have a great. Thank you. Everybody out there, have a great President's Day, and listen to what the candidates are saying, and make a sound judgment that you can change things. Have a good day. Bye.